Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Strangers and Aliens. I am Ben Avery, one of the Strangers and Aliens who will be your host, I'm a singular host, for this evening slash morning slash afternoon, whenever you're listening to it on your pod thingy.
And thank you for clarifying that you're not a plural host.
Well,
that'd be really strange.
I did say I was a stranger and an alien, so yeah. You know, I could script it and it'd sound like this, hello and welcome. Or I could just, you know, try and jump into it and just really feel it out.
Yeah.
And either way, I don't know if it's working. But,
really doing something to it.
So, I am Ben Avery. And here along with me, as always, are my two co-hosts. And one of them is over here to my right on the screen and Skype. I see him and his family looking at me, even though he's only him that's talking to me right now.
It's just me. I'm strange and I'm alien and I'm Steve McDonald.
And then, I'm Dr. Jason. I can confirm that Steve is strange and alien.
What about you, Dr. Jace? Strange or alien or neither? Or both?
Gosh, I'd have to say both and neither, depending on the day.
Okay.
For a second there, I tried to think of something really spiritual to say, like I'm not of it, but it just came off as really dumb.
Speaking of spiritual, Dr. Jace, did you see the comment that one of our listeners left on your Green Lantern versus Vision blog?
I did.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that
was pretty. See if I can grab it here. It was because it was Green Lantern versus the Vision.
Yes.
And we had Green Lantern win. And you should go and check out our blog and the Superhero Tournament of Champions. And Carl Borg, old friend of mine, says, gotta go with the android, not because of his last name, which is possibly the coolest last name to have if you're a comic book fan.
I was going to say, that's a pretty cool...
Yeah. But cool. His answer is based on Proverbs 29:18, which says, where there is no vision, the people perish. So you have to give some serious kudos to him.
A scripture with Green Lantern, and I'd be a light into your path and a
lamp. Let your light shine.
I stopped there.
Speaking of superheroes, we are here to talk about some superheroes. We're taking a look back at Batman and getting ready for the end of the month with The Dark Knight Rises, which I think we're all interested in seeing, and two of us are excited about seeing. Would that be valid to say, Steve? You're not excited, but you're interested?
I'm interested.
Yeah. But
yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, Dr. Jason and I, we're pretty pumped.
So
we're going to take a look back at Batman on the big screen, not the tiny screen, the TV screen, although I'm sure we'll bring it up. But
More's the pity.
Yeah, it is. It is more of the pity. But we'll be writing some blog postings about that kind of stuff, too, for the week that Dark Knight Rises comes out.
Yeah.
But no, Batman on the big screen starts with 1966. Adam West and Burt Ward had a TV show on, you know, the small screen, and in between seasons they filmed a movie.
And this was actually before any of us three were born,
I'm assuming. Steve, we're never sure about you.
67.
Because
you're
like,
I had a rumor that from Noah that you were around back then. So,
very funny.
Meanwhile, Dr. Jace graduated from high school last month. We want to congratulate him.
Congratulations
for that accomplishment.
That's true, and that's after I skipped five grades.
That's right.
After being held back for, you know, 20 years, but that's beside the point. So yeah, it was before we were all born. Although I did see this on film, because they travel, they took it around and showed it around, you know, the world with it on the big screen. And basically as a way to get people, you know, interested in the TV show, or more interested in the TV show, and make some money. And
how could you possibly be more interested in the TV show?
Well, if you weren't interested at all and saw the movie, then you would be more interested. But I actually saw
it. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
I know. That's my favorite line from the whole thing. I've put that as my status for Facebook twice in the last 3 or 4 years.
Nice.
Yeah. I reused that one. But I actually saw this. You know, I grew up in Canada, where the hub of activity for our town was the ice skating rink and the hockey arena. And that's where we had all the different activities and stuff that would happen. We had our, you know, different community parties there and things like that. Took ice skating lessons there.
Had a hockey rink and a hockey arena and an ice skating rink?
Yeah, they were both the same place.
Oh, okay.
You had the ice skating things. Rink was inside the arena.
it would be only in Canada where you would have like someone like splitting hairs and saying, "Oh no, that's an ice skating arena. You can't have that in a hockey rink." You know, and it would be like, you know, only in Canada.
There's a lot of things you can say only in Canada about, but I'm not going to, in case we have any Canadian listeners and don't want them to.
Hey, I'm from Flint, Michigan. We were basically an annex of Canada, so go. You know, I like those Canucks.
So anyway, my they were showing it. They, you know, you could get the projector and put up a screen and get movies that way before VHS was big and obviously before you had digital projectors and that kind of thing. And they brought that movie in and showed it at the arena in one of the like the community area. And so I got to see it on the screen, and it was pretty exciting for me as a little, you know, 4 or 5 year old Benji going to see this movie. And
that has to be, because I mean, up until 1989, the only Batman that people really thought of was Adam West. I mean, he was Batman.
He was. And the other thing is, you know, you had Superman that came out in theaters.
Yeah.
And after that, what was there? Superman 2. You know? Yeah. So to see Batman, you know, it wasn't in a theater, but it was close enough for a little kid, you know, like I got to see Batman on the big screen. And it was exciting. Plus, on Saturday afternoons, the Batman TV show was playing. And so, you know, every Saturday afternoon, I was seeing Adam West be Batman, beat up bad guys, and he was my Batman. You know, that was so cool to have him do that and see it on the screen like that.
We had it every day. It was like part of the, like the, you know, the cartoons plus kids show block. And it would be like every
weekday
day.
Afternoon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, we couldn't. I mean, when me and my brother, when we were growing up, you know, every time we would fight, we couldn't, or we weren't supposed to really make contact. But we made sure we were always going wham, pop, slam. And then we'd have to watch it again to find out what are some of the other ones that we kind of like whop, you know, or boink, you know, and we're kind of like, you know, we'd have to kind of learn all these words. Now, being the oldest, I would accidentally hit my brother just because I wanted to hear what it really sounded like. And to be honest, sometimes it really didn't sound like boink. Sometimes it just felt like...
like bunk?
Thud.
Yeah.
Yeah, like thud.
Thump.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but everybody's skull is a little bit different. My brother's was more of a thud than, you know, a boink.
I'll take your word for it.
All I know is that scientific progress goes boink, so I don't. Yeah. I'm not following.
Me and my middle brother aren't very close, but you know, I'm just kidding.
Well, by the time my brother was old enough to do play fights, I was watching more Star Trek, and so we were doing the jump kicks, the Captain Kirk jump kicks, and always getting careful, always pretending that our shirts were like getting torn off. You know, so I'd like pull it off one arm, so it's hanging out, or it's still on my neck and still on my arm, you know, but it's, you know, it's like I'm Captain Kirk, you know, and it's this little scrawny, you know, 7 or 9 year old or whatever.
And your mother's like, "Did you rip your shirt again?"
And the truth is, those kicks are so unpractical. I mean, if you really try it, it really doesn't do much.
Well, you want to bring reality into this. I remember in high school, I can't remember what my which teacher it was or why it was even brought up, but he was talking about how, yeah, if they were really hitting those people in Batman as hard as they are to knock them out, those people that Batman and Robin are knocking out would have brain damage. Like a single punch that knocks you out that quickly. There's some serious things that are going to be happening there.
Well, what I think is funny you had mentioned is the thunder hit, you know, where they basically clasp their hands together and then they hit with that. Do you realize how ineffective those things are?
Well, how about the karate chop to the back of the neck?
Yeah, like exactly.
Fingers too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway. So this is Batman for decades, you know, and only Batman.
This particular movie has one of my favorite guys, one of my favorite actors, Burgess Meredith, in it because, you know, one of my other favorite shows was Twilight Zone, and he's in some epic Twilight Zone episodes, and he plays the Penguin.
And Rocky.
Yes, and Rocky.
I mean,
and the Dick Van Dyke Show.
And pretty much everything else until his passing. You know, he was.
Yes. He was awesome.
And he's probably the only person who really got out from under that Batman umbrella, other than maybe Cesar Romero.
As Joker, Adam West has made a career now as on The Family Guy, which is not a show that I care for, but he has done all sorts of voiceover work since then.
But most of it comes from playing off of the character of Bruce Wayne, Batman. I mean,
do you remember when the 1989 came up and Adam West was going to sue them because he was Batman? Do you remember that?
I remember he wanted to be in the movie. And they were trying to figure out ways to say no to him.
I remember that he was like – he had a quote or it was one of those Entertainment Tonight shows or something talking about how he was going to sue, you know. And, you know, whether it was tongue-in-cheek or I don't remember, you know, or if that's something I saw on YouTube. I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I mean, he is very closely identified with Batman. And without him doing Batman the way he did you know, I don't think that show would still be as fondly remembered because I mean he took it seriously when he was playing it. I know he knew the joke. I really think he knew the joke when he was playing Batman, but he played it so straight.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I like about the movie, especially. Is
you guys? I mean, do you like it?
I do. Yeah, we should probably mention that. I do. I like that movie. I like going back to it every once in a while.
It's finally so showed it to my children too. Over the top, yeah.
So you like it?
Yeah.
Both. Of
I like it for what it is. I mean, I don't.
I mean, there's problems with it. If you want to sit down and like really evaluate the plot, you're.
No, I agree with you guys. If you see it for what it is, I find it to be a very fun, over the top, campy.
Yeah.
You know. Sometimes it's good to have those campy sci-fi stuff. For instance, you know, on one of my Christmas lists, Santa Conquers the Martians. Yeah. I like it because it's so campy that it's funny and it's entertaining.
And, you know, it came in a time for us, I think, you know, watching that show as a child or in that movie then as a child, you take it seriously then. You see it as superheroics. And now we watch it and it's just like, oh my goodness, this is really subversive and pretty funny. But at the same time, it has a very straight theme to it of just
Even as a kid, I can't imagine that these evil villains are stupid enough to believe or not be able to figure out that the Batman with the mustache and about 35 to 40 pounds slimmer is not Batman.
Yeah, now that wasn't from the movie, but
was just that good at playing Batman.
That was an episode and very ridiculous. Yeah.
There's more than one episode where Alfred plays Batman and I thought it was in the movie, but I mean it's ridiculous. Okay, the guy has a mustache. He doesn't have a mustache. He has a mustache. Oh, wait a minute. He looks like a skeleton.
Yeah.
He was just that good at playing
and he's
him.
Not wearing a girdle. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
Now, the movie itself has some serious leaps in logic, like some of Riddler's riddles that just don't make any sense.
Yeah,
but they figure it out immediately.
In logic. Are Olympian.
Yeah. And another one of my favorite lines is when they're running to save the United Council of Nations, yes. And they're like, they have to run because their helicopter crashed because a Polaris missile that has riddles in it almost hit them. And so they're running, and Robin says, I'm getting a stitch, you know, because he's getting a stitch in his side or whatever. And Batman says, let's hope it's a stitch in time that saves nine. The nine council members of the United World or whatever it is.
And I just can't imagine that Catwoman, Joker, Penguin, and Riddler all work together as nicely as they did.
Oh, they weren't completely nice. I mean, Catwoman threw her cat at the guys, and they freaked out, you know.
But come on, throwing the cat is pretty minuscule.
And then Penguin not only has the money to buy a pre-nuclear sub, you know, on the secondhand market from the Navy, but has the time to outfit it to look like a penguin and to take the propellers off and replace them with flapping penguin feet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absurd. And you're watching it as a kid, you know it's absurd, but you're enjoying it because it's fun. And then you're watching it as an adult and you're enjoying the fun, but then if you're able to enjoy that kind of fun, and there are, I know people like my wife who just, that's not the kind of thing that they would ever go for. But
It's a bit like a cartoon in some ways.
Absolutely, yeah. But it cast a shadow over superheroes for a long time. It was a long shadow. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, even still now, bam, pow, slap or whatever is like on the headlines for any comic book related news report or something like that.
Yeah.
Because of this. And it made, I think, getting a new Batman movie, you know, in the 70s or early 80s, especially after Superman came out, it made it, I think, difficult to do because...
Yeah.
What do you do?
Don't you think, though, that's why they got Tim Burton and to try to go a completely different direction?
I think a big reason why. So let's move to Burton's Batman then. We're kind of taking these in order, but we'll kind of take them in chunks. We got two Batmans from Tim Burton. We have Batman and Batman Returns. So starting with Batman in 1989, when did you guys first see that?
I think it was right around 1980. I'm thinking
nine,
maybe 89. Yeah,
that's the only 80 left. You know, if you're not seeing it in 89, you're not seeing it in 1980. Anything. So.
I'm pretty sure that was in my wheelhouse back then. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So you saw it in the theaters when it came out in 89.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Batman 1989 is the first movie I ever went to with a girl. And I was highly, highly underaged. I somehow was able
to... Was the girl your mom and you were like in utero?
Oh, no. No, this girl I had a crush on, and she was of age to see the movie and I was very much not. And so that's how I remember this film, because for whatever reason, I don't know how I talked him into it, but I had my mom pick up the girl who's several years older than me, drop us off, and we're there with her friends, but we didn't sit with her friends. We didn't talk to her friends. I was there, and all I cared about was the girl until the movie came on. That I remember watching as the cameras kind of go through this cave, and I'm like, ooh, what is this? As the opening credits, and then it revealed that it's the Batman symbol.
Yeah,
and I remember going, wow. This is cool. I'm in a movie by myself with a girl. I'm so grown up. Hey, wait a minute. That Batman emblem on the front of the movie is different than the one on his outfit and costume. What in the world are they thinking? Pretty much my stream of consciousness.
Wait, you went from being with a girl in a movie theater on a date kind of thing to straight up nerd nitpicking?
Exactly.
Wow. Well, you were young. We can, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't make that same mistake twice, you know, unless it's Strangers and Aliens and we're arguing.
But you're not arguing with a girl on a date.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I did make the mistake of bringing up Star Trek on a date with a girl, and it was my last date with that girl.
Wow.
Yeah. It was not good, and I did not realize how stupid I was until after I got home.
Be honest. She probably walked out when you started tarring off the jump kicks, right?
No.
When you had your shirt ripped
off. She was in the car.
Were you demonstrating, Ben? Come on. Yeah.
We were in the car. There was no escape for her. And we dropped her off. And that was her escape. And she never looked back.
Wow. Wait,
did you suggest she become a red shirt? Is that
No. Maybe it was I said that Captain Kirk was one of my my role models. And she's like, oh, so I'm just one of the green-skinned women. Is that it?
Wow. Well, at least you didn't break out like the diamond ring and say, engage.
Ooh.
Wow.
That would have been horrible.
That would have been, but awesome at the same time.
That is so bad.
Okay, back to Star... I was about to say back to Star Trek. No, back to Batman. So we're in Batman.
We're going to have to...
It's 1989.
You going a whole episode without mentioning a book or Star Trek. That's what we need to...
Now. This is Strangers and Aliens. This is true, this kind of stream of consciousness.
What do you guys think? What are your thoughts?
We've got two different movies here. And so we might have two different thoughts about them. But I did enjoy, when I first saw that Batman 89, I really liked it because it was so different.
Yeah.
And it felt adult. And yeah.
It wasn't Superman 4 or Superman 3.
And we were coming right off of Superman 4. We were coming right off Superman 4. Or was Superman 4 right after this? I can't remember.
I think
now.
Superman 4 was 86, 87.
Okay.
You know, I remember that this movie got a lot of flack because it was dark. And
for the time.
That's probably why I liked it, and because it was different.
I think, I think a majority of fans would agree with you about that.
And to be honest, people gave a hard time to Michael Keaton, but I actually liked Michael Keaton as Batman. I actually liked him a lot as Batman, and I know that probably some of that was coming from the Beetlejuice people who were like, how could he be Batman? But,
he was a comedian.
Yeah, exactly. And Jack, of course, was Jack. He was awesome.
And got top billing.
And he I got mean, top billing.
How which, could he not?
Yeah, it's true. However, Keaton should have been paid more. Every movie, he got paid less than the villains, which is stupid. Bad business, which is why they lost him later on. But
I agree, though. I liked him both as Batman and as
Bruce Wayne.
And he, as Batman, it was difficult because it was hard to move in that costume, I think.
Yeah.
In every movie, you can kind of see a progression of getting easier to move. And yeah, kind of figuring out how that works, but
I remember watching an interview with Michael Keaton about how he said, and I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one. It may have been the second one, where he talked about how it was set up to where he could actually go to the bathroom in his costume. And there's actually scenes in the movie where he's going to the bathroom, although he didn't share which scenes those were.
I don't know about that, man. That's kind of.
No.
That's too much information, man. But
it's pretty commonplace when you're in outfits like that in movies. They build that in because you can't just take it off.
Yeah. And now, looking back at it, though, I'm watching it as an adult, and I'm thinking to myself, this isn't as dark as I remember it being.
No.
I feel like it's a lot more campy and feels a lot more like Adam West.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was dark for the time, but I mean, at that time, dark wasn't that dark, you know?
I mean, Jack Nicholson, he's playing Cesar Romero, Joker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's taking it to another level, and I do like that whole thread of him as he's the world's first homicidal artist,
you know,
and death is his canvas and that kind of thing, and that was dark and gritty, but then he's just all that laughter and everything, and it's supposed to be unnerving, but it really... didn't feel that way watching it, you know, last week. Because I've been watching all these, not last week, but a couple weeks ago. I've been watching all of these movies to prepare for some blog posts the week that The Dark Knight Rises comes out. And, yeah, so...
I will say that, because I love Jack. I mean, Jack Nicholson is an amazing actor. He's a great Joker, was the earmark of Joker for a long time. I would say the one area, and I felt this even back when I first saw it, the one thing where it did not work for me was near the end, because the Joker was not a physical threat to Batman, by the time that they faced off, it was anticlimactic. And yeah. I would have liked for them, and this is not a performance issue, this is a writing and a direction issue, for him, he's psychotic, so he should have had some kind of thing to neutralize Batman, to make it even, because he's that crazy.
Yeah.
And so that was you know, when it's the apex of the film, that is the only area where I kind of like, I wish they would have done something different.
Yeah, and... because that's where you get where he actually punches Batman and hurts his hand.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Like, not only is he not a threat, when he actually tries to be one, it just falls flat.
Yeah, with all this, you know, he's this kind of genius with all this chemistry stuff. You think he'd have something better planned for the bat.
No, he's running upstairs into a place that he was not planning to go. And
Yeah.
I'm going to fight a bat, so let's go high.
Yeah, he'll never get up there.
So even with the benefit of hindsight now for Batman 89, what, thumbs up or thumbs down? Because I think we all are thumbs up on Batman 86. So Batman 89?
I think every single movie that we would come across, especially superhero movies and sci-fi movies and stuff, it's going to have logical problems with it. So I think taking all of those with the grain of salt that they come with, you know, it's built in. It was a very enjoyable movie, especially coming off of having no real superhero movies for like the entire 80s. So, yeah.
But here's the other thing. Oh, go ahead, Dr.
No, Jason. I was going to say, I thought that I liked it. I'd give it a thumbs up. I thought the cast was pretty good. You know, Kim Basinger and Billy Dee Williams, like the first time I saw him since Star Wars.
Harvey Dent. How can he not be cool because of Lando?
Exactly. Jack Palance is awesome.
And I forgot about Kim Basinger. I mean, she was, to my high school mind, the epitome of beauty because of that movie.
Right.
I mean, she was just shot very beautifully. But that's all she really was in that movie. She didn't have much of an arc.
Yeah, there was really no story there for her.
But you know who got an arc is that random reporter that she worked with who actually, like, does...
Alexander Knox.
Yeah.
Robert Wool, I believe.
I think so.
He was cool. I liked him.
He actually gets, like, he's proactive. He's more proactive than Batman in some ways.
Yeah.
Batman is reacting to everything. He's running out there, I'm going to help people, even though he has no powers or anything. Like, puts a nurse's mask over his mouth to stop the laughing gas.
I like him a lot.
That was cool. I was surprised. I had forgotten about that altogether. Okay, so let's move. Okay, so that's three thumbs up for Batman. The thing with Batman for me is it was all about mood and tone more than plot. I mean, it's about the visual. Yeah. It's about the character and the mood and the tone. And it's very Tim Burton, and sold me on Tim Burton. I was a big fan of his for a long time after that.
Yeah.
But it's funny, though, even though the Batman 2, Batman Returns, was very much a Tim Burton movie and very, you know, the whole thing that you just said, I didn't like it hardly at all. I mean, I didn't like the characterization of the Penguin. I think they just brought his whole character down to nasty levels. I mean, his character is a nasty, nasty character.
His character is a pervert. And I had completely forgotten how perverted that character was until watching it this time. And he's just, you know... he's just lecherous. I mean, he's just leering at every woman.
Yeah.
And
creepy.
Yeah. The only reason they can get him to like do the bad guy plan is by promising him women and, I'll do it. You know, it's just like, oh my goodness. And just the puns and jokes that he's making, just, you know, about women and different things about women. We'll stop there, I guess, since this is a family podcast. But
be interesting to find out what was going on with Tim Burton around that time. You know, I mean, in relationship way, if he was having trouble channeling it.
It's always interesting to find out what's going through Tim Burton's brain.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's always got something strange in there.
No, he wasn't writing it, though. It was written by the same guy who wrote the first one, wasn't it? I can't remember his name now.
Sam Hamm?
Yeah.
What was the deal with that? I looked into that for a little while ago, and now I'm blanking on it. But yeah, Sam Hamm, I think he definitely had a hand in it.
No, it's Kane.
Well, Bob Kane created Batman.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the list right now. Yeah, Daniel Waters is what I was trying to say. Daniel Waters did the screenplay.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Waters and Hamm did the story, but Waters did the screenplay.
Interesting. Because I know Sam Hamm came in on the first Batman, too, and kind of added his little flourish to it. But I guess his little flourish wasn't what they wanted for this second one. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of liked it and I kind of didn't like it. I thought the Penguin was pretty creepy, but at the same time, the Penguin is the hardest villain, main villain of the Batman series to do in the modern era, which is one of the reasons why Nolan doesn't want to do it. But
what's he got? He wears a tuxedo, so he's called the Penguin. He has a pointy nose and an umbrella.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what he has, and he's kind of a gentleman and a monocle.
See,
you know,
if it were me, I would love to see the Penguin become like the mob boss, you know, the organizer. Yeah. So to me, I would like to see him as the mastermind type of villain.
The mob boss mayor.
Hey.
You know, mayor of Gotham, who's also the mm-hmm. mob boss. And then you've got a double identity for him.
Yeah, but not penguins being pallbearers and penguins being henchmen with little lasers.
But we're going back to Batman, Adam West, Batman, the shadow that cast. Where, like, even in the 89 Batman, Joker becomes Joker. And then what does he do? He gets henchmen and gives them monographed jackets with Joker faces on it. You know, I mean, this is going back to that original Batman idea.
It's bad as Penguin pallbearers or Penguin laser hunters or whatever there was.
And this is why, to me, sometimes when I think about Batman Returns, and I'm with you, Dr. Jace, about sometimes I feel like I like it and other times I feel like I don't. It's absurd and it's ridiculous. But then the imagery is just so over the top and so, you know, gothic, and, you know, just I can't help liking that aspect of it. I mean, the imagery, there's so much religious imagery in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Penguin in a carriage going down the river, you know, like Moses.
Yeah.
You know, going down the Nile and being found by, you know, circus freaks or whatever, or penguins in a deserted zoo and what does he do? What does he do? He's gone for 30 years, right? And then he comes, and he returns, and he's going to start his ministry, so to speak. So you got this kind of Jesus thing going on. And then you've got this whole firstborn son getting killed, you know? And it's very biblical ideas and imagery. And even when he's, like, you know, they're carrying him like a pallbearer, and he's falling in the water after having died, and his arms are outstretched. I mean, it's just ridiculous how over the top it is. And
wow. Then we haven't even gotten to Michelle Pfeiffer.
I was just going to say, we haven't even talked about Catwoman, who, again, I mean, this element is a good element. I thought
that the Penguin was the most controversial character because of the grossness. I mean, I think of him, I think of him eating the raw fish, and it's gross.
And he was really doing that.
Yeah, that's gross. But Catwoman, that was a cool character because it was a different foil to Batman, a different type of challenge.
And they did it right, I think. I mean, they didn't. You couldn't tell if it was some sort of supernatural thing where these cats, you know, she falls off a building, and then these cats start, like, nibbling on her, trying to, like, eat her flesh, but she's dead, or she's not, and are they bringing her back to life, or is she just happening to wake up and now she's psychotic and she's seen cats and so she's going to do that? And some of the things they do with that character of, you know, her and her secret identity is very interesting. And as she's, like, just having this mental breakdown and becoming Catwoman.
Yeah.
And then I love the scene, the party scene, where everyone in the party scene is wearing masks except for Michael Keaton and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
So the two people who wear masks and, you know, go running out in the dark and do crazy things are not wearing masks. They talk, they kiss, and they realize at that same exact moment, and I love that moment where they realize, oh, I'm kissing Catwoman. Oh, I'm kissing Batman. And then Michelle Pfeiffer's line is, as she realizes it, does this mean we have to fight? You know, and it's just this, I love that idea of the villain and the hero not knowing the secret identity. And it's cool.
And that's where I think basically what Tim Burton did was he took a pinch of campy and put his dark spin on it, which when you take some of that campy and the dark spin, it can, in some elements, i.e. the Penguin, it makes it very dark and creepy. But but then we haven't even talked about Christopher Walken's character, which...
Oh, my goodness. And his son.
Yeah, Christopher Walken is awesome. I mean, he is... He's just... When you, I mean, and beyond
pure,
cowbell.
He's
cowbell,
pure Christopher Walken. I mean, it's just,
he's Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
And you talked about how the four villains in Batman 66, why would they work together? Well, Penguin and Catwoman don't want to work together. I mean, they are antagonistic to each other. And I like that aspect, too.
Yeah.
You know, this is the scene where there's a scene where Michelle Pfeiffer takes one of Penguin's birds and puts it in her mouth and then opens her mouth and lets it go. She really did that. Like, that was...
Yeah, I mean,
these were great actors, interesting roles. So, thumbs up or thumbs down, guys?
I'm going to have to give it a thumbs down.
Dr. Jace?
I'm going to have to give it thumbs sideways.
And I'm giving it...
Equivocator.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, like you said, on the Catwoman... there are certain times that I there are certain parts that I like, and there are certain parts that kind of bug me. So I'm kind of in the middle on it. I would see it again. But of the two Burton films, the first one is by far superior in my mind.
And, you know, you split the difference, but I'm going to make this a straight out tie then, because I'm going to side on thumbs up. Just because more often than not, I fondly remember this movie. And it's more Tim Burton, I think, than the first one. So that brings us to the next era in the Batman cinema franchise, the Joel Schumacher era, starting with Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. So,
yes,
Batman Forever, Val Kilmer plays Batman. Chris O'Donnell comes in as Robin for the first time. And our villains are Two-Face and Riddler, and it's basically Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey playing Jack Nicholson, both on, and it's, so anyway.
I would disagree with that.
Yeah.
Well, we can, it's a gross exaggeration, it's just the laughter. There's so much laughter in this movie, it's that giggling and just that constant. And then when they're both on the screen, they're doing it together.
That's the entire time
that they're together.
Yeah. I think
I've seen your mind, freak.
Yeah. That's pretty much Jim Carrey and everything he does.
Yeah, it is. And I wouldn't have had a problem with it if it was just Jim Carrey. But Tommy Lee Jones, he does it too. I mean, he's playing Two-Face, but he's playing Two-Face as if he's actually Joker.
But I think with the thing with Two-Face is he's not, I mean, he wasn't on the TV show. So he at the time he was not like a huge iconic character that you could easily find some reference material for. So Tommy Lee Jones was probably like, well, you know, okay, I'll play him a little bit like the Joker, sort of make my own style of it. You know, he's sort of crazy half the time, sort of not, so I can play him like half Joker type thing. And that's probably what he did, you know?
I think that the Schumacher style just lends itself more to that anyways. But I'll say, you know, I don't think we can move on personally to the villains, because the biggest change here is Batman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
because it's the same character we've had in two other movies.
Yeah, it's the same. It's supposed to be the same storyline. And I personally would say, I think was the only person that actually returns is Alfred.
And the Commissioner. You know.
Yeah, and the Commissioner. I actually love Val Kilmer, and I thought that Val Kilmer as Batman was a good choice. I actually liked him a lot. If I I like Michael Keaton a lot. He was the original as far as this new wave of Batmans, but Val Kilmer is probably my favorite Batman because I was a big Val Kilmer fan. He's Iceman from Top Gun. So,
from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. No.
Different Iceman.
As far as leading man is concerned, do you guys, Val Kilmer, yay, nay?
Yeah, I liked him.
I did too. And, okay. You know, I this movie came out in the middle of college, and I just remember being really excited about it partially because of Val Kilmer, partially because of Jim Carrey. Because Jim Carrey had done, at this time at least, he had done The Mask, I think, and Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
At least that. I don't think he had done Dumb and Dumber yet. But, yeah, so we were, you know, in college, we loved Jim Carrey. Val Kilmer was cool. He was the epitome of cool.
No, because the first three movies he did, I remember because of his catapult to fame, was Ace Ventura, Mask, and Dumb and Dumber were all back-to-back. So this would had to have been after that somehow.
This was after – well, before or after Dumb and Dumber, we loved him, thought he was hilarious, and also in Living Color.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's this outrageous, funny guy. Oh, he's the Riddler. That's perfect. Better than Robin Williams, who – wanted to be Riddler.
No, I would have loved Robin Williams as Riddler and would still like him. I love Robin Williams.
But not my group of friends in college. We were excited about Jim Carrey. And Robin Williams at that time, he was doing what, Patch Adams? I mean,
I'm not a big Robin Williams fan, so I'm glad that he didn't do it. I probably would not have watched the movie if he was in it.
Yeah, he was probably doing the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon movie,
The Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, Good Will Hunting.
This is dramatic Robin Williams time, or right at the beginning of that, maybe. But so you have Jim Carrey, but Val Kilmer, he was the epitome of cool.
Oh, yeah.
And, so I liked him as Batman. I liked him as Bruce Wayne. I don't know if I liked him better than Michael Keaton.
I think it was just the nostalgia thing for Michael Keaton for me, I think. It was just... You know, he became Batman for me. He was in the first two movies. I just expected him to be in the third one and to continue on, but he just wasn't. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Why switch? I mean, it didn't make sense to me at the time. I mean, it was a different – I was used to Christopher Reeve being Superman.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, he was Superman for four movies. Why would he do two movies and then have another movie come out a couple years later and he's not the Batman? I mean, it just didn't make sense to me at the time. But he did a fantastic job. He was great.
Yeah, you know, I guess for me it came down because I like Michael Keaton a lot. For me, I think the reason why I liked Val Kilmer, because he was cool, was I believed that if the two of them walked into a room, I believed Val Kilmer would walk out the winner. That's, you know... that was my impersonation at the time. My impression at the time was that Val Kilmer was tougher, whether that's reality or not. That he was Batman in that way.
But Michael Keaton was crazier, and had that kind of wildness.
Yeah, but you didn't need that. Joker, the bad guys are crazier. You didn't need another crazy. But
but he's on the cusp of crazy is the thing.
He's
not going to be. He's in control, but he's got that wildness behind him that could, you know, explode. But he's got the rage in check, and he's going to use it.
If you've ever, I grew up in a really bad area, and crazy can go a long way. But if you go crazy on the wrong guy, your crazy becomes dead. And so I will take the guy who can literally stare you cold in the face and know he can take you, versus the guy who grabs the fire stick and hits a vase and acts like he's crazy. A la Michael Keaton.
But which guy do you believe is going to dress up like a bat to go out? And, instead of just dressing up in you know, combat fatigues and like...
Well, Batman Forever deals with his craziness, you know, it deals with the black and white and the two sides, so...
And almost fixes it. That was one problem a friend of mine pointed out to me and that he really had with the movie was that they tried to fix Batman.
Well, no, it's not. It wouldn't be a bad. For instance, if this was a Burton film and this was his finale to his Batman trilogy, then that would have been a great storyline.
Yeah.
You know, because he finally found some kind of resolution. So to me, it's not a failure. Until they do Batman and Robin.
Well, because in Batman and Robin, you have the fixed Batman.
Yeah.
And the Batman who's accepted a partner. And, exactly. Like, but sticking with Batman Forever for a moment here, we also have, what's her name?
Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman. And
Chris O'Donnell.
And Chris O'Donnell. And, you know, it's a packed movie, but it worked for me. And, you know, for the thumbs up, thumbs down, I give it thumbs up. I really enjoyed it when I first saw it. It was a fun superhero movie.
Yeah.
You know, plot holes galore, but who cares? Because that's not the kind of movie where you sit down and just analyze. Oh, although the riddles in this movie from the Riddler were almost as bad as the Batman 66. And why did he have to solve all these riddles to know that Edward Nygma was the Riddler? The guy wears a domino mask and has crazy hair and crazy facial expressions. You're not going to notice that he's the Riddler. Oh, you need all these 11 riddles.
Well, his hair was different when he was in the Riddler costume.
That's true. You know what I love? Here's something else I didn't notice until the last time I watched it. Or maybe I noticed it before, I just didn't remember. Is Jim Carrey, as he gets more successful as Riddler, you know, selling the device that sucks your brains or whatever, starts looking more and more like Bruce Wayne. He's turning himself into Bruce Wayne, his hero. His hero rejects him, so he becomes his hero.
Yeah, that was, I think, a stylistic on purpose, I think.
I loved it. I thought it was really cool.
I agree. I actually, you know, I think Batman Returns, I liked it because I was supposed to, and there are things I really liked about it. But Batman Forever, I thought, was really fun. I thought that I liked Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones, and I'm huge fans of those guys. You know, I'll just tell you, though, Robin, Chris O'Donnell as Robin almost killed me. Just almost, because, you know, he's as an actor, he drives me nuts. And so as Robin, as this iconic character, he just is so stonish and woodish. It's just not believable, in my opinion.
I'm trying to remember how I felt about him at the time, and I can't. But now I'm okay with
the whole Robin thing. You know, I mean, back then Robin was not popular. It wasn't, or at least among my friends, it was sort of like, you know, Robin got killed in a comic book. Yay! You know, so
it was kind of sad. Well, because he was brightness in this dark character,
right?
And And so you have the Tim Burton version of Batman, and then you give a guy in a, you know, red and green tights and a yellow cape and put him in there. It's right. Not going to quite.
Well, they did tone that down. They made it crimson.
Well,
ask bigger.
Yeah, and they made it make sense because that was his trapeze outfit.
Yes.
And then the body armor was based on the trapeze outfit to try and make sense of why he would wear this kind of clothing when he's running around with a guy dressed up as a bat. also, his motorcycle helmet had a Robin on it because that was his nickname from his dad or something like that.
Yeah.
But, going back to Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones, I wish that Tommy Lee Jones would have played it a little darker and a little less maniacal and a little more of a dichotomy, you know, and the actual two personalities where he's bouncing back and forth between, you know, not necessarily good and evil, but bouncing back and forth between less evil and more evil. He would just sit back and flip the coin until he got the result he wanted.
Yeah, but the reality, though, is that's writing and direction. I don't put that on the actor, because Tommy Lee Jones is an amazing actor. That's when you come to those types of things, and especially when you look at Tommy Lee Jones's body of work, that has to come down to direction, because I have to believe that they had other takes. And, you know, that I would agree with you on that, because I remember watching Two-Face thinking he kind of reminded me of the Joker, but it's Tommy Lee Jones, and Tommy Lee Jones is good at it, even though it's, you know, kind of Joker Jr. a little bit.
It was just too much for me. Not enough to ruin the movie, but enough to kind of annoy me. And wish. And the other thing is to have the Jim Carrey character just playing off of that kind of darker bad guy. So you have the dark bad guy who needs this brilliant, insane bad guy. But the brilliant, insane bad guy is just like annoying him, and like to have that kind of relationship. And that is, you're right, writing and directing. Although I wonder how much directing Joel Schumacher actually gave to Tommy Lee Jones.
There's only a few directors that don't overstep their bounds. Like Clint Eastwood is an acting favorite because he doesn't give much direction at all. He goes, "I cast you. I know you can do it. So do it." Directors often, and I think Joel Schumacher is one of those directors that has a vision of what he wants and a style that he's going for. I'm a little bit biased because Joel Schumacher has done some films that drive me nuts.
His films are visual, beautiful visual movies, but they aren't character pieces. I mean, I don't see him as an actor's director. I see him as a, let's set up the cameras and have great costumes. Oh, go ahead, actors. Go ahead and act. Do what you're supposed to do. We're turning the cameras on now. Oh, look at this costume. Oh, look at this. I mean, he films beauty like he makes Nicole Kidman look so gorgeous.
Yeah, no. There's no doubt he's talented. It's just because as an actor, story and character are extremely important to me. That part drives me nuts. It's the same thing why it drives me nuts. His Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera drives me crazy.
See, I didn't even bother with that.
I'm positive I had to have gone there on a date or something because I would not have gone on my own volition. But anyway, so that brings us because it's possible my bias comes from Batman and Robin. I mean, it's very possible that pretty much just ruined it for me.
I think that a lot of people would again agree with you there. So let's talk about, well, first of all, Batman Forever, all three thumbs up on that?
Yeah. For me. Okay. Easy thumbs up.
All right, so we're moving on to Batman and Robin then. Yeah, wah, like you said. And I think I mentioned when we talked about superhero movies that the next time I watch this, I was going to try and watch it. And I should say, by the way, the second time also, I was going to try and watch it as if I'm watching a modern updating of Batman Adam West, which I did. I tried. It doesn't work that way either.
Yeah. No. Wow. Okay, I'll just tell you. First of all, I was greatly disappointed because I loved Val Kilmer so much that when I found out he was not coming back, I was bummed. Then I found out that strike one. Then I found out that Chris O'Donnell was coming back, which I was not a big fan of. So that was strike two. And then there were talks that they were trying to get Patrick Stewart to be Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze.
And then all of a sudden they get Arnold. Strike three.
See, here's what I think happened is I think Patrick Stewart, they were in talks with him and he read the script.
Had to have been.
And, I don't know all the story about why Val Kilmer didn't come back. I've heard that he was just mad and didn't want to come back. I've also heard that he had to do The Saint and couldn't come back. And I've also heard that Joel Schumacher did not want him back. So I don't know what the true story is. They were filming The Saint around that time. But so we have a new Batman. We have George Clooney.
Who, yes, we do.
In some ways, is the best Bruce Wayne, I think. Because
really good Bruce Wayne, yeah.
Because he is Bruce Wayne. He's not acting. He's just being himself, and he happens to be like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
To me, if everything else is in place, if the direction better, if the script is better, if Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't Mr. Freeze, and they're not skating on ice, I could get past George Clooney being Batman. I could. Now, other people can't because, because you're right. He is Bruce Wayne. So that part, when you actually see his face, is that an issue. And when he's in the Batman costume, you don't see that much of him anyways. So that part, I could suspend my disbelief. But with Chris O'Donnell moving up the ranks of being third billing,
Because Arnold got first billing.
Yes.
And Clooney got second. Is Chris O'Donnell above Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So So yeah, we forgot Batgirls in this as well. But
Batgirl and Poison Ivy. There's just way there's way too much story and not enough good story in there.
Well, no. There's the germ of some good stories, but it's there's a lot of problems, but let's take this movie for what it could have been. It could have been
wait, we're not even mentioning Bane.
Oh, we'll get to that. But here's what it could have been. It could have been a really touching story about Bruce Wayne's father figure becoming ill, and Mr. Freeze's wife is dying, and they both have the same disease. Right. Yeah. And so you've got Mr. Freeze who's doing these crimes to, you know, somehow save his wife, and you've got Batman having to save his father figure. And okay, so then we throw Batgirl in there, then we throw Robin in there, Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze. Does that matchup make any sense at all?
It's like the Legion of Doom had like a family picnic, and these were the leftovers or something like that.
It doesn't make any sense, and it's not even. No. I mean, they just work together, and then
don't you think? Okay, even if you keep Schumacher's style, if you, like you just said, if we get rid of the Poison Ivy storyline, the Batgirl storyline, and we focus in Mr. Freeze and this, like you said, the father figure with the loss of his wife, and then replace Arnold with Patrick Stewart, and Patrick Stewart hires Bane to be the muscle, all of a sudden you've got the main character with the story and then just the muscle.
Well, you could even throw Poison Ivy in there because of the whole idea of getting medicines from plants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have this element of Mr. Freeze needs her and has to convince her to, like, come to his side or whatever. And so now he's even more on the side of the demons, you know, where he's compassionate. You feel for him because he's losing his wife, but at the same time, and he's an incredible actor, you know, with Patrick Stewart, but at the same time, he has to make all of these concessions and stepping back and like, you know, just keep getting worse and worse and deeper, trying to save his wife. And yeah, and then keep Schumacher's style. So you've got story, you've got style, and you've got some subtext to character here.
Yeah, I would think that you'd have
to that's get not the movie they made.
No.
Not even close.
Nope.
I mean, just having Patrick Stewart would have raised the ability of this cast, like, probably tenfold.
Yeah.
Well, and even if they kept some of the over-the-top stuff in this movie, I mean, I don't know. I don't think... Well, I have seen one movie that brought Patrick Stewart down to its level.
And it was Safe House?
Is that the one where he's a terrorist and he's, like, invading a school for boys, a military school?
No.
Oh, that's the one I'm thinking of. And I don't even remember what the title was. I saw it on TV Saturday afternoon once when there's nothing else on. And I'm just like, this is Patrick Stewart. This is what he does after Next Generation.
Well,
he didn't do Mr. Freeze, so he could do this.
Any actor can be brought down if it's a bad enough script and a bad enough. I mean, I love Tommy Lee Jones, but I saw him in a public service announcement for a theater, and it's just awful. So, I mean, if you look at some of these great actors and some of their worst movies, anything can go wrong. Because it really – lighting, writing, and direction can really go a long way to making you look good.
Oh, yeah.
So here's Clooney's thing is he knew it was bad. And he's like apologizing to people for this movie. Well, and Schumacher did too. On the DVD, Joel Schumacher apologizes to the fans of Batman Forever who came in expecting another Batman Forever, and instead they were given this toy commercial.
Right, but Clooney probably cashed out on it.
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, he's all about making, you know, a big Hollywood movie if he can, you know, take the cash from it and turn it into a movie that he wants to make.
But this is before he was a movie star. He was a TV star, but he wasn't the movie star George Clooney yet.
Yeah, because he's... If you read between the lines when he talks, I mean, this is probably the movie he's most embarrassed about.
Yeah.
And so I think that if he could, he probably would change it. But, like Ben said, he didn't have the clout back then, really, to really make those changes. If he had the clout then, maybe it would have been different. But I know that the very first thing I would do was recast Arnold's spot. And I like Arnold, but he is about the furthest actor you could get from being the real Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. Well, and you can tell they rewrote the script to make it an Arnold script.
Yeah. I mean,
every line out of his mouth, every single line is an ice pun. Every single line. It just made me really cold on the whole movie.
I just remember, all I remember is Bane, you know, Bane. He just, you know, how do you fit three prime villains? I mean, it just was ridiculous.
Well, you
and the Batgirl and Robin and Alfred having to play. I mean, it was ridiculous.
So I think we spent more than enough time that this movie deserves.
I don't even think we have thumbs down. Thumbs down, thumbs down.
Yeah, can I give two thumbs down for that one?
I'm putting my toes down.
We wish you would put your toes down.
I'm putting my foot down here. This is. I tried. I tried watching it to see redeeming qualities, and there is some visual flair, but not enough to save it. I mean, obviously not enough to save it.
Guys, I'm losing energy. Batman Robin just makes me nauseous and
so
tired.
Let's take a side road. We're going to leave Schumacher, and we're going to take a side road into one movie that is loosely connected to the Tim Burton Batman movies. Have either of you guys seen Catwoman yet?
No. No.
I will just say this. I watched Catwoman 2 nights ago, I think it was, maybe 3. For the blog, and I regret every moment of it.
The trailer was so bad, and the concept is so bad. Catwoman, who cares about Catwoman by herself?
Well, they tied it in loosely with Batman,
right?
Returns, because they had a picture of Michelle Pfeiffer in one shot, like an actual photograph of Michelle Pfeiffer in the Catwoman suit.
Ben, I just wanted to congratulate you. You brought up the one movie that may be worse than Batman and Robin.
It was absolutely worse than Batman and Robin. So that's the Batman franchise. The Batman franchise went from Batman and Robin to Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back triumphantly with Batman Begins.
Well, where else could it go? They weren't going to do another Schumacher movie. They had to go another direction. It's like they had to, like with Batman Adam West, they had to go with Tim Burton. From Batman and Robin, they had to go to something serious, I think. And so now we have the last era of Batman on film as of right now.
The latest.
Where do you guys rank Christian Bale? Is he, of all the Batmans, is he 1, 2, 3? In your opinion, where's he at?
In Batman Begins, I really liked him as Bruce Wayne. I thought he was a great Bruce Wayne, especially when he's Bruce Wayne playing two different parts. He's Bruce Wayne playing Batman, and he's Bruce Wayne playing the careless playboy to throw everyone off that he could possibly be Batman. And then he's Bruce Wayne just being Bruce Wayne. And I liked him as Bruce Wayne. As Batman, the voice kind of got on my nerves, like a lot of people that,
yeah,
I am Batman, you know, but I did like him. Well, and that was I think the intention was, he's supposed to be frightening to these people he's talking to, but I like Christian Bale a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Christian Bale, and I especially liked his voice, because the truth is if there's a guy really doing that, he's probably going to talk differently to scare the bejesus out of people.
And to protect himself.
Yeah. To hide his, you know, but I mean, let's be honest, guys. I mean, this isn't all-star cast. Michael Caine, Liam Neeson, Katie Holmes, Morgan Freeman, Gary Oldman. I mean, Cillian Murphy, Tom Wilkinson, Ken Watanabe. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, it's loaded.
Yeah. Yeah, and they dig into the more current mythos with the Ra's al Ghul element. So, you know, getting that in where it wasn't even touched on, I don't think, in the Schumacher or the Burton movies.
Well, and the villains in this movie had nothing to do with the TV show or the previous movies.
Right.
Yes. I mean, Scarecrow
was one that I'd been waiting for, because there were rumors back in the day that Scarecrow might be the next villain. Although I think back then they were talking about how
Howard Stern.
No. It was oh, come on. 30 Rock. Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin?
Baldwin was going to be Scarecrow. Oh, there was talks.
I hadn't heard that. I heard Howard Stern. Really?
Yeah. There were talks that, you know, back, you know, during Burton's time, that his third movie could be Scarecrow with Alec Baldwin. And so I liked it, although I would like to see Scarecrow even in a more menacing kind of thing. But Batman Begins, when I first saw it, I'm like, this is the best Batman ever. This is cool. Liam Neeson is awesome. Michael Caine is awesome. This is an amazing cast, a good story.
And one of the things that initially it's sort of like they start to go wrong, but then they pull it around backwards and they do it the right way, is that so many heroes, especially in Batman's era, the Shadow, and you know, you could name 50 of them, the no name characters from the comic books of that era, who were, you know, trained in the Orient, trained in martial arts, trained, you know, by Asian monks, and all these, it that's their backstory, that they were trained in these mystical arts by the Asian monks. And you're sort of like, yeah, okay, I guess that's plausible. And then in the Batman movie, they took that element of it, which had been sort of backloaded into it back in the 80s and the 90s, but they actually show you having him trained by, you know, the ninjas and all that stuff. So you have that element to it, where I was initially sort of like, oh, great, they're just going to do that as an easy way of telling you why Batman is Batman. But then they you know, slipped it in that here he is being trained by them, and you get to see, you know, the army of guys that he's in the middle of, and they're turning around really quickly and turning around really quickly and all that, and just in lockstep. And you're like, okay, this I can understand. This I can see. You know, this is something that's real. And you know, go ahead.
One of my favorite parts is when, because, you know, Liam Neeson's character tells him, you know, he goes, they train him in theatricality. But when they face off and in Gotham, and he looks at Bruce Wayne in the Batman suit and goes, yeah, you took that theatricality a little too literally. I mean, it's so funny.
Here's my thing. My thing is this, really, I'm enjoying it. I feel like I'm seeing it for the first time when I'm watching in Batman Begins, this origin of Batman, even though I know the story and I've read the story and I've seen stories and everything, I'm enjoying this, and it doesn't bother me the way
I like the elements of, like, being a deflator mouse and he's bored. And then I like the element that he actually gets to talk to his father before his father dies. You know, those were new stuff that was put in there.
And I think the biggest thing, though, was that people hadn't seen the progression of the Batman, how he becomes Batman. But also, this was the first one where Batman was the focus. The others, it was always about the villain. It was about the Joker.
Yes.
It was about, you know, Two-Face and Riddler. This one actually was about Batman. And I think that Batman is such a engaging character that people can kind of relate to him to some degree. It's easier to relate to Batman than it is to Superman. You want to aspire to be Superman, but, you know, Superman seems a little bit too perfect sometimes.
I would disagree with that, but that's another podcast, I think.
Yeah.
But I do agree with your take on it, that Batman, you can relate to him. You can understand him.
Because he's human. You know, he's conflicted.
Right.
He's and so I think that's what made this. And to be honest, if you do a story that's been told a million times, if you do it well, people will watch it. And Christopher Nolan took a story and a well-known character, and he had an amazing cast, amazing writing, and he told the story well.
So thumbs up, thumbs down. do I need to ask on this one?
Yeah, no.
I think we have three thumbs up here, right?
Well, mine's like 3/4 of the way out.
It's up or down. It's up or down.
Hey, he got a sideways.
But 3/4 of the way up is up. Okay. Like,
if that's how you want to, if you, okay, fine. Fine. It'll be up. All right.
So we moved to Dark Knight. We've talked about Dark Knight on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. Steve has problems with it. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jason, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I haven't rewatched it though, since I saw it in IMAX that one time. When it first came out, and I finally bought it on DVD at a used place, so I wouldn't have to worry about late fees and not returning the DVD to my library. So I found it for $3, which I would end up paying more in late fees than that, probably.
Yeah,
to my library, but
you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. I really don't have anything else to say. I think there's only one issue I have with the whole movie, and that's with Maggie. The recasting of Rachel Dawes.
Maggie Gyllenhaal?
Gyllenhaal, I think, was as far away from Rachel Dawes as you possibly get. I'm not a huge fan. But other than that, this is one of the tops, one of my top one or two, three favorite comic book movies of all time. It is amazing. Christian Bale, rock solid Batman, and Heath Ledger is probably the best villain of a film out there.
And finally doing a Joker who's not Cesar Romero.
Yes. So yeah. Heath Ledger was phenomenal.
So we have that's Dr. Jace. That's your take. Thumbs up. Thumbs I'm assuming. Up. Yeah. It's in. I doubt it could be in your top five and be a thumbs down. You must be. You'd have to be really critical for that to work.
I hate it.
So, Steve, just a brief statement.
We've talked about it. What I don't like is the it's the story elements. Yes, Christian Bale does a great Batman. Yes, Heath Ledger does a phenomenal Joker. But the there were many, many story elements, and if someone really wants to find them all out, then you can listen to the other podcast or contact me directly or whatever.
Or you can do a blog post about it too.
I could do a blog post too. But it was just so many things about the story itself that fell flat for me. It seemed like it was obviously rewritten many times because it seemed like they were going down different paths. There were times in the plot where, Batman rescues Rachel from the party where the Joker has crashed the party, and then it just segues into the next morning where he's sitting there looking out his window, and I'm like, what happened to all the other people? Didn't you rescue them?
That is a problem. Yeah.
Just things like that. And
so thumbs up, thumbs down.
I know you guys love it. But I have to say thumbs down just because – and you know what? I probably wouldn't be so picky about it if it wasn't so almost universally loved. But it's because of that where I say to myself, no, guys, don't look at just all the flashy, yay Batman type stuff. Look at it critically. And I think when you do, and I'm not saying you guys haven't, I'm just saying.
I always look at it critically. I just understand. Disagree with you.
But I can't understand how you could look at it critically and not see those flaws and not have them make a difference in your opinion of the movie.
Steve, when it's being considered for potentially best picture of the year, mm-hmm. I think you have to kind of look and go, is this a taste thing? Or is this really, it's a bad critical movie? And to me, I just think that you kind of sometimes have a narrow view of what you like.
It could be. And I have a lot of problems with a lot of the best movies of the year. So yeah. That doesn't play much for me.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Well, I'm excited about watching it a second time now. Like I said, the first time I watched it was on IMAX. And so when it came out on DVD, I'm like, I'm not going to buy this and watch it on my little dinky TV because it was such an experience for me. And I was really taken by the experience. It was a big movie, and it was a crime movie, and it was, it had this kind of chess back and forth a little bit between Batman and Joker, and there were these kind of questions that kept getting brought up as far as, when it comes to doing the right thing, when does it become doing the wrong thing if you're trying to help people and that kind of thing. And I like that. I am excited to watch it again because I have quite a distance between myself and the film the first time I watched it, and having talked with people about it since then, not just Steve, but other people who've pointed out, you know, criticism and stuff. I'm excited to see what my opinion will be.
I've seen it about 7 times, and you know, it's one of those films that I'll put up there along, you know, these Nolans, as long as this last one doesn't completely bomb, this group of 3 movies will go up there alongside for me as along with Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, up in that range for me.
All right, well, it is time to wrap up this conversation. I think next, Steve and I will be talking about Spider-Man. And Dr. Jace, you're doing a lot of work right now with your church plant. You're going to be gone for the next little while. Is that related to your church plant, or you're just doing a vacation, man?
Yeah, getting a little bit of a reprieve, going to see some family, that sort of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. God bless you and all that.
Thank you.
Well, that's it about Batman until the end of July, when we will be talking for sure about Batman's new movie, The Dark Knight Rises. And so until then, I'm Ben Avery.
I'm Steve MacDonald.
Who are you? I'm Batman.
And that was Dr. Jace O'Neill.
Was that your
1989?
That was 1989, Batman.
That was on the trailer. That's the only I remember. The very first trailer is he grabs him. He goes, "Who are you?" He goes, "I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. I want you to tell all your friends about me."
Yes, I love that. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I'm Dr. Nice. Jace O'Neill.
And we want you to tell all your friends about us. You know, if you like our podcast, you could leave a review on iTunes or, you know, just say something nice to us about on the blog. And we'd also like to hear what you think about the Batman movies. If you have any special thoughts or memories or anything about that, let us know. And we'll use them in a future episode. You can contact us through the blog or through Facebook or any of those type of things. Or you can also email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. Thank you for spending your time with us. And until next time, Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Steve MacDonald. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. We invite you to join the conversation by visiting our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we are @StrangeAndAlien, or like us on our Facebook page. If you'd like to email us directly, our email is podcast@strangersandaliens.com. And once again, thanks for listening. Yeah!